I think he has only two sound. He has only two soundworks, but Dan Graham was inspired by this book of Åkerlund about self-awareness, and after reading this book, he decided to give up performances, because he made a lot of performances on a stage. He decided to give up performances and to make only installations. This was my inspiring point. And therefore I thought it's very interesting for particularly for American artists that they take such scientific ideas and have new ideas for their own artwork, but there is no knowledge what is happening with the visitor of a sound installation. I don't because it's not the same as in a virtual reality. And so I hope to initiate some further research, because a sound installation is not a work. Carsten said it already in a strict sense. It's only a setting, and the setting is completed by such situational aspects, different rooms maybe, or different visitors, the work of the visitor, and so on. And maybe you know also that traditional artists counter-argue that this can be a form of art, but I think it's a very important and new form of art.
Okay. Now there is Volker.
Carsten, I wanted to draw your attention to the work of Michael Baldwin with his air conditioning show. So he was also working with different rooms of different temperature. And I have a question for Mr. Johansson. In your presentation, you mentioned that when you adjust your piece or the strings to a certain room, you change.
Well, that's a very precise question, thank you. There are two aspects that would be changed. One is the arrangement or the composition in space of the elements. And this mainly relates to the perhaps to the shape of the space, because in a way, in a visual domain, the space sort of becomes non-existent, because it's a dark situation usually, and you don't see the walls of the space. You just see the kind of glowing lines. That's the only perception of space that you would get. So in a way, I adjust a perspective on the space based on these visual elements. And the second thing is, the composition, first the composition of sound structure or timed events. As I mentioned, there are a number of pieces that could be played within this system. So, and also these different pieces are open to interpretation. So adjustments in the time structure, durational structure, onset structure, things like that, and also, well, what the composer usually would do with the musical structure.
So you're mainly concerned. You first decide about the set of frequencies that are available, that are determined by the length of these elements. Then you place them in the room, and then you create a time structure.
Well, there exists a template for structure, let's say, and I can. It's a algorithmic and interactive process. These are not fixed pieces usually. And then the spectrum of available overtones is quite wide. It's not just the bass frequency of each string. It's actually I have a lot of tones that I can make use of.
Is there any further questions?
It was a long question. I'll try to summarize. The first part was about. It's difficult to translate in English, but the question was about objectivity, and the quality of being an object of the sound. What's my look at this situation? And the second part was. And if I consider that the sound is self-sustainable, why? I guess the question is why it needs to be extended into other domains. As I briefly mentioned, this situation of sounds and objects and objectivity is quite a complex one. It's more that I'm initiating this discussion, and but to my mind, also the sound is objective, in a sense that is a physical reality. One can not only experience that but also measure it in very quantitative terms and analyze it as a physical phenomena. So, in this sense, it is in Kantian terms, it is rather objective than subjective. That would be my interpretation. So, not only that it's related to physical objects, but only it's a kind of objective reality that is out there, presumably. The second part of the question. I think the sound is self-sufficient also, but I argue that there are different sonic effects and experiences that can only be attained keeping in mind this presence, or what I call objective sound or objectivity sound. And these come, this is not a pure theory, this is something that I have experienced myself as a listener or a beholder of artwork. So I think this art involving sound definitely has many faces. One is fixed medium, or something that you can put on recording and listen to it, but there are also practices which gain from the fact that it's not possible to attach to a fixed medium, that it can be only a direct experience within a specific space. So. I hope I answered your question.
I think we've got a few more minutes. I mean, just may I raise just a rather banal question? Whether you think you said the sound has a certain objectivity within itself, and there is the sounding object. So just say there is an object like the string, and do you think that the sound that's been produced by the object tells us anything about the sound, like the inner truth of it, like the identity, like things, like this mythical idea of you tapping something and the soul, the identity of the object speaks to us? Or is it just pure coincidence, just a tin can and it makes a cracking noise or whatever?
Could you first explain what is the soul of the object?
I don't know, but some people think that there is something that you could just, you know, no? That you could make the object speak. And for example, I don't know, like a heavy object would convey some of its weight in the sound it produces. See what I mean? That they are actually related, at least. This is less than identity, how is this relation of the objectivity of the sound and the object that produces the sound?
I think we can boil down the discussion to more the rational terms, let's say. And if we stay there, then definitely the sound conveys the properties or the physical reality of the physical kind of tangible properties of the object, the things that we can even measure, like the material density and shape and size and things like that. I think they, to experienced listener, they really tell a lot about the object. But I wouldn't like to focus only on objects on this argument, because the same is true also about any sort of places, premises, architectural spaces. There is this book by Barry Blesser, Space Speak, Are You Listening? And his argument is that you can capture the nature of architectural spaces just by listening to them attentively.
Yeah.
So I think that definitely the sound is a carrier of some physical signature of and physical entity.
Great. Is that Helga de la Motte? One more comment? Okay.
I like to make an additional remark for you, Rama. If you look at the history of art, so we have in the late 18, I go always back, we have in the late 18th century, the artists claimed for freedom. This was the starting point, named to the autonomy. And then follows, because if the artist is autonomous, so the work has also to be autonomous. And I think we have a process which is going on so that we today can claim for freedom or autonomy of the perceiver. That's my short history of art.
All right. Okay.
Good final word.
Okay, thank you very much for that. We're going to close the session now. I just wanted to remind you that this is just the end of the first half of this day. So we'll have I don't know if there's lunch, but there's definitely a lunch break now. We're going to be back here by 2:30. We're going to listen to another major lecture by a theorist, by Volker Strebel, who is, by the way, I didn't introduce you. He's sitting right here, and he raised one of the questions, by the musicologist Volker Strebel. And then we have two artists again, so there is theory again, and there is art, and we'll see if they are both connected. Okay, see you again, 2:30.